As you know, our studies in the evening have been going through a subject about church planting, and I've been following through just in the outline and chapters of the book by a man named Hyde, and his fellow author, Lems, is the last name. And the author tonight is Mr. Lems, and he has a chapter titled Flock and Family, A Biblical Balance. It's actually about and addressed to the church planter especially, and I went back and forth whether or not to treat this in a teaching session, and decided to go ahead and do so because I think it's important for the congregation to know about the pastor, his life, his family, and some of the things that I'll say tonight I'm going to be addressing to myself. As well as addressing it in a way that I'll often speak of it as third person. I'll be talking about what a church planter, pastor ought to be like, and things that ought to concern him. But it's also important and instructive for you as a congregation to know about the pastoral ministry. There is not a mysterious veil that the pastor goes behind and comes out from behind each week, and neither is there a veil around his family that makes them somehow super special or set apart in any way. They are, we all are members of this congregation. And so there'll be some things that I'll describe where I'll pause and I'll give illustration from our own congregation about how you help me care for my own family and have a balance in caring for them as well as caring for the congregation. So I want to say that at the outset too, just so that you understand that I'm encouraging you as a congregation and commending you in the way that you've cared for us. The author, Mr. Lems, says the church planter must maintain an intimate relationship with his wife, a close relationship with his children, and a pastoral relationship with the people of the church plant. And that provides something of an outline or an overview for his concerns. I thought I would start off with a description of the perfect pastor. I found this online, so you probably know where this is going to go. The perfect pastor preaches exactly 10 minutes. He condemns sin roundly, but never hurts anyone's feelings. He works from 8 a.m. until midnight, and is also the church janitor. Yeah, we talked about this last week, didn't we?
I take back what I said.
The perfect pastor makes $40 a week, wears good clothes, drives a good car, buys good books, and donates $30 a week to the church. He's 29 years old and has 40 years worth of experience. Above all, he's handsome. The perfect pastor has a burning desire to work with teenagers, and he spends most of his time with senior citizens. He smiles all the time with a straight face because he has a sense of humor that keeps him seriously dedicated to his church. He makes 15 home visits a day and is always in his office to be handy when needed. The perfect pastor always has time for church meetings and all of its committees, never missing the meeting of any church organization, and is always busy evangelizing the unchurched.
I could add one more thing to that.
Oh, good.
Lots of cute kids.
That's right. And they're always well behaved. That's obviously a joke. I hope that you got a chuckle out of that, as you obviously did. But there is something of a thread of honesty, and the things that make us laugh are the things that sometimes strike closest to home. And maybe the thread of honesty is that there are expectations about the pastor. And I'm very happy to be in a congregation that takes care of both me and my family. But I want to go over these things as we move forward, that you would keep these things in mind as you pray for me and the pastoral ministry in which I work in, as well as you pray for our sister congregation in Enid, and pray for Noah Bailey, and for the broader pastoral ministry of the church in general. Again, as I said, sometimes I'll give firsthand testimony, sometimes I'll use the third person as an effort to use our situation as a building block to pray and to think about the pastoral ministry. I found it interesting that in that description of the perfect pastor, that it doesn't mention the family at all. And it was only Danny's addition there that mentioned the children, and that was that they were cute and well-behaved. So marriage is something that is very important for the pastor's life. The church planter, of the church planter, Mr. Lim says this: "Men, I can promise this. If you neglect your wife's needs, the church plant you pastor and your family will suffer sooner or later. Let me state this even more boldly. If your intimacy with your wife is severely lacking or non-existent, it will ultimately hurt your family and the church plant." Now, I said that I'm going to be talking sometimes third person and sometimes first person, and I want to point out here that this is something that I do take very seriously, something that's being connected to Vicki and being being understanding of our relationship together is something that I put in a job description, and I hope that you would as well, as you think of the perfect pastor. So you can check off on this case that he has a beautiful wife. And when we think about the role of husband and wife, Paul very very carefully teaches about that in Ephesians chapter 5. And so I'd like to look at those verses. Remember that there is more in Ephesians 5 than just the relationship of husband and wife. There's an illustration as well of Christ in the church, but here it as well as instructions for husbands and wives. I'll read verses 29 through 31. 25 through 31. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." As I said, there is a lot more there than just the relationship of husband and wife, but for our purpose tonight, I'm interested especially in the care that husbands have for their wives and the broader passage, vice versa. Here we're focusing on the pastoral ministry, and in this case, we're focusing on the relationship of husband and wife. What Paul talks about is the idea of cherishing his wife. There is a tension for men to be so focused on their work that they neglect everything else around them. And that's true for men in general. And it is not the case that the holy calling of the pastorate is any more holy than any other vacation. And so pastors, pardon me?
Vocation.
What did I say? Vacation? Vacation. Thank you.
It just seems like a vacation.
Yeah, it does. It's such a great job. It's a vacation every day. It's not just a job, it's an adventure.
It's the congregation that makes it such a great...
That's right, that's right. So we don't set aside the pastoral ministry as any more holy than any other calling. God has called each of you men to labor, to provide for your household. And as a responsible Christian man, you do that. He's also called you and called me and called pastors to care for their households. Pastors aren't immune from the danger of overemphasizing vocation or vacation sometimes, overemphasizing work to the neglect of your family. He says to nourish and cherish your wife just as the Lord does the church. Describing us as being members of His own body, and for pastors, there's a tendency from my own experience to say, this is the Lord's work. How can I say no to the Lord's work? And in doing so, neglect my relationship with my wife. In a broader sense, as we move on a little bit here, there can be a tendency in church work to look at jobs that need to be done, to conclude that somebody has to do it, and the pastor thinks, I guess I should do that. Or the congregation might think, I guess the pastor should do that. And pretty soon he is indeed working from 8 o'clock in the morning till midnight and is making 15 visits and is always available in the office for every need. And pretty soon a work week can extend to every day of the week. And by the way, you know this... this very well, and this is something I do appreciate about the congregation, that Sunday, which we mark as a day of rest, is actually the pastor's busiest day, and the pastor's day of most work. And because of that, I typically take another day of the week off from pastoral duties. But when do pastoral duties stop? And that's the challenge that a pastor faces, is that finding and taking a day of rest that is somehow separate from Sunday, which is something of a day of work. Now, I do delight in the Lord, and I find great spiritual rest in the work that I do. And so there's a spiritual rest that we enjoy together as we worship together. And so I find great comfort in that. But also finding physical rest is important for the pastor. There's a proper balance that is necessary. And that's something that the author of this book talks about. That I read the chapter title, Flock and Family, A Biblical Balance. And that's the charge really for every man as you come to understand what God has called you to do, to balance that responsibility to work, to subdue the creation, to rule over it, and to do so in a way that does not neglect your other duties, the duties towards your wife and family. So it's important to find and to strike a proper balance towards work and marriage. Another aspect to marriage is that and here's another place where I really appreciate our congregation. The elders of the congregation have and should take an interest in the pastor's marriage. I hope that you realize that that our family participates in session visitation. This is something that we as elders do in every family of the congregation. And my own family participates in that. As I said, we're members. We're part of this congregation. The elders understand that. And they visit in our home. They invite us to reflect back on the year that we have just gone through, to note places where where our faith has been challenged, where we've had troubles or difficulties, where we've enjoyed God's blessings, where we're thankful. They lead us to think of these things and they pray together with us and for our family. They typically ask very directly about our relationship together as husband and wife. I don't know if this is something that they got from our commission back when we were a church plant, some 25 years ago now, or excuse me, 20. How old are you? 22 years ago. Same with Samuel's age when we moved here. One of the borrowed elders that would come and visit here in Stillwater was named Bob Catloth, and he would come once or twice a year, and he made it a point of holding me accountable. He asked me, "Have you taken Vicky out yet this month?" And it never failed. Whenever he visited, he would ask about the care that I was giving to my household, and especially to Vicky. And he would ask Vicky that too, just to make sure that I wasn't trying to pull a fast one. Well, the elders take similar care and concern. They ask about that. So it's important for the pastor and for every man in every situation, but again, we're talking about church planting. A pastor is not immune from the need to nurture his marriage. So I'd encourage you, as you have done, to faithfully continue to encourage your pastor to nurture his marriage. Encourage us to spend time together, and encourage us to pray together, to talk together, to share and to develop each other's gifts. Closely related to expectations of the pastor, I might also add that there are probably, I didn't look this up on the internet, there are probably lists of the perfect pastor's wife as well. And there can be certain expectations given towards pastor's wives. Again, somebody's got to do it. And if the pastor's not going to do it, then sometimes the pastor says, "Well, honey, why don't you do it?" And in that situation, the pastor's wife has the expectation not only of this is the Lord's work, but my husband is asking me to do this. And there can be expectations that the pastor or the husband can place on his wife, and not just those of the congregation. I want you to remember, as you have done, and encourage you to continue in this, that the pastor's wife is a member of the congregation and has vibrant and vital gifts to offer. She has many things that she already does and can offer to the work of the church. But remember that there is no office in the New Testament of pastor's wife. There is the office of pastor and elder and deacon, but not the office of pastor's wife. The relationship is brought up in those very pertinent passages about elders and deacons, and that relationship is in view. It's not as if as if I'm unmarried or anything like that, but just be conscious of those expectations that might arise. Another area that I appreciate about about our congregation is that the author encourages congregations to befriend the pastor's wife, especially. The pastor gets a lot of attention in church work, and he's the man. He's the one that's up front. He's the one that gets a lot of attention. And sometimes the Lims talks about the pastor's wife coming to be looked at as a stepping stone to the pastor. You want your pastor's attention, and so you might use the pastor's wife as a means to that end. Instead, again, as you have done, I encourage you to continue to get to know her and her gifts. Encourage her as you would any other member of the congregation and any other friend. And again, think of this not just in our own situation. I hope that you would be encouraged to continue what you're doing well there, but you'd also think more broadly of of other pastors that you know. Let me move on then to the children of the congregation. Wayne Mack, another Christian author, says that the ultimate responsibility for bringing up our children to know the Scriptures rests not with the church or school, but with us as parents, and especially with those of us who are fathers. Again, we can speak of this in the broad term and apply it to the role of husbands and fathers in general. And so there are things here that I hope that you would understand are important for all Christian fathers. But again, our subject tonight is church planters and church pastors. Think about the old proverb that says that the shoemaker's children go barefoot. What does that proverb mean about the shoemaker? Let's just start off with what it says right there. What does that mean? Danny?
It's kind of like the shoemaker is so obsessed about everyone else's needs for shoes, like, and their demands that he overlooks the people in his household. Or perhaps he thinks, oh, I'm a shoemaker, of course they'll have shoes, and he never realizes that he hasn't given them shoes, you know.
The mechanic's car is always broken.
Yeah. Yeah, why is that?
Because they're always helping other people.
Always busy helping other people. So apply that to a pastor and his family. What might that look like?
Really bad.
It's a position where the kids are expected to be strong Christians, but they've never been invested in. So they have this weight they have to carry, but they don't have the ability to do it.
Because?
Father was too busy helping everybody else.
Yeah. And I take this very seriously and encourage you to continue to pray that I would be both husband and father in my own household. I don't want our children to be barefoot. One of the other things that is cited several times in the book that I'm teaching through is a church planting manual that the OPC Church put out. That's a sister denomination to us, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And they make it a point in their manual to call attention to this very special need for caring for wife and children. It says, of all that is required of an organizing pastor, Nothing is as important as utilizing all your shepherding skills in the care of your own family. You should consider your family to be your most treasured possession and their care to be your highest aim, as well as an opportunity to show the Reformed concept of covenant theology. So the first part of that definition is very good. It's very challenging. It calls on pastors to not be so busy caring for the spiritual needs of the congregation that they miss the spiritual needs that are right in their own household, and leave your children to be barefoot. The second part says that there's an opportunity to show the Reformed concept of covenant theology. And the second part is true, but I would also note an aspect of that definition where what Jonathan said is very true, that there's a sense of the pastor's family being a showcase family, and there's no pressure, right? That the pastor's family must be perfect. That's what we joked about at the very beginning, that he has cute kids and are well behaved. Again, this does come up in the description of office bearers in the New Testament. Paul describes a ruler of the church ruling his household well. And so it is in view, but the pastor is not alone in that, and the pastor is not perfect in that. In this fact, I'll just say what I wrote down here, that the pastor's family is not perfect. No secret there, I hope. But in this, I would urge you to see that we are, in a sense, a model family. We face all of the same struggles and trials and temptations that you do. There are ups and downs. There are sins and joys that every family has. We look to Christ daily to supply us grace and forgiveness and food and shelter and love. In our devotions, we read God's Word. We pray together on a daily basis. We are a member family. And as such, once again here, I'll commend you as a congregation that the elders treat us as a member family. We do have visitation. We have our devotions together with the elders. They inquire after the spiritual well-being of our children in the home. And as they get older, our elders visit individually with our children. There's a balance that's necessary, a balance between flock and family. So, back to the perfect pastor. No, we won't go back there. I'll just close by encouraging you as a congregation to continue in the things in which you have been encouraging us, that as you have treated us as member families, as a member family, as husband and wife and children, that you would continue to do so, and that you would do so more broadly as well, with the remembering our sister church in Enid and other churches. By the way, just one other note that I would lift this out a little bit broader for you. In the RP Church, on the Home Mission Board level, this is something that we take very, very seriously. That so seriously that when an application is submitted to the Home Mission Board for any reducing aid, that there's a request that application identify someone to mentor the pastor. We've even talked about having some woman in the presbytery be involved in a way to mentor and care for the pastor's wife. At this point, that's not part of our application, but it has at least crossed our attention. We've tried to address it through the mentorship that is so necessary to the pastor. That mentorship is at least a minimum of calling once a month to talk about ministry matters and family. For our own situation, I can describe the relationship that I have with Noah, that we meet either in person or by phone once a week to be able to do this very thing, to talk about ministry matters, and family is almost a weekly matter that is brought up between us. I'm going to pause there and ask if you have any questions about the lesson tonight. Vicki?
Because your wife is particularly whiny. Pastor's wives, I mean, this is kind of a general thing, too. It's not just pastor's wives that have those concerns, right?
The part about caring for pastor's wives,
yes.
Or...
Like, I'm not being really demanding here, right?
No. No, I should have warned you beforehand. This is not directed at Vicki, only for you and for the rest of the congregation and for the perpetuity that the recording gives. This is not directed at you. No, I don't think it's because I'm identifying something about pastors' wives. I'm identifying a tendency of pastors to neglect their wives. And that's what I'm trying to hit at first and foremost. And I say that not pointing my fingers at anybody else besides me. Any other questions?